This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nelly. Our guest this week is Dan Bossi, president of Ag Resource Company. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. A glut of grain and oil seeds in the world has brought a dramatic downturn in commodity prices over the past several months. Dan Bossi, president of Ag Resource Company, says U.S. growers desperately need increased demand for their crops. Bossi says anticipated market strength for domestic crop feedstocks for sustainable aviation fuel and renewable diesel has been quelled by tremendous imports of used cooking oil.
No, I think back in 2021, 22, Jeff, when all of this got announced, run through the markets, and we started to understand that we were going to be building out 600 million bushels of additional crush and that we needed an extra 5 to 7 million extra acres of soybeans, and where was that going to come from, and how did that affect corn and wheat. These all things were widespreadly discussed in up until about the middle of 2022, and then it actually started coming to fruition. We started to see investors, both commercially and privately, putting money into new crush facilities, and they started getting built out. In fact, we brought another three online here in late September, early October. That makes it for four this year, four new plants. So that's been good. But on the other side of it is that I think where the market and everything has didn't understand was the importation of used cooking oil from China, tallow from Brazil, and those two have kind of overwhelmed the soybean oil demand story. And so we're left with crop prices today that are near four-year lows. And demand driver we were so hopeful about, let's call it 2.5-3 years ago, is not to be seen today. Now, things can still be changed such that it can become a demand driver, but we got to get back to where it would be subsidies would go to U.S. produced product in terms of the United States on renewable diesel, and that would be a big step forward. We can't keep having these cargoes of Chinese used cooking oil coming in, and we think some of them are virgin palm oil with a hot dog and a french fry. But you know, nonetheless, that's kind of where things are sitting, and a demand driver has been pushed back in time, we think.
Where is the political will, in your view, of Washington, either from the regulatory structure, from the White House, or from the Congress?
Well, as you've seen, or we've seen recently, there's been meetings and letters sent by 40 congressmen, congresswomen to EPA and others that have tried to highlight this point. We've seen recent meetings between the Biden administration and ag industry in trying to make this point also. I can't tell you that any fruit has been born yet today. We probably will have to wait to the lame duck session or later of Congress before we know anything. But, you know, again, I think the political will is there to do something for the U.S. farmer. The question is when and the timing of it all. And I think a lot of that is clouded by the upcoming election.
So looking at the regulatory structure, it's not just the federal government, it's also the states. And CARB in California has made some moves and is looking to limit the amount of crops that it can be used in the making of renewable fuel. That's also a strike. Is California the only state that's backing up on this measure?
Well, it's one of the states. The other, of course, backup, if you will, is the difficulty we've had with pipelines and carbon and all of those sorts of things. And they continue to be slowly worked through. But, you know, California and CARB is the big one at the moment. Again, this is only a proposal as I understand it today. We'll watch how it manifests itself going forward. But again, people are also concerned about using something like soybean oil, a food product, if you will, and running up inflationary aspects of the grocery bill again. So it's a balancing act, Jeff, and I think states and federal government will engage in that. But importantly, ahead of us is this election, and you know, people that I talk to would say that you know, maybe the Democrats are a little more friendly to green fuels than Republicans. We'll see how that all works out. But on both sides, we need demand drivers for U.S. agriculture, and at least today we're lacking
them. Well, so in the second side of the beginning question was not just domestic demand, but also that of global demand. At one time, the U.S. was a major player. We were the major supplier for bulk commodities to the world. That's not the case today. Are we working ourselves to insignificance globally?
Well, I've been doing this a long time. This is my 45th year. I got in this business in 1979, and at that point, the U.S. Control of world agricultural trade was up around 62%. Today, as we calculated at Ag Resource, we're sitting around 12.3%. So you can see the big diminishment, if you will, of U.S. ag's prowess and presence in the world agricultural trade. And I really believe that's the biggest problem going forward for American agriculture. I think of this duopoly, if you will. I think that globalism is slowly ending. We're forming a duopoly of where Beijing and China, Beijing and Washington are the new power centers politically and economically. And with that, there's changes in ag trade flows. And so the Chinese are getting very cozy with our friends in Brazil. In fact, high-level delegations have been there over the last couple of weeks and another one coming up this next week. So I do worry about the coziness of the BRIC countries and what this means for U.S. agriculture on a longer-term basis. Again, it'll take some political will to pull us back from the fray, but it's trade that is the biggest concern that I think all of us should have, at least in my work looking forward.
You hear the agriculture groups talking about trade, and in fact, even over the past week, it was corn and soybean growers coming together and suggesting that they fear tariffs and another tariff war with China, saying that if that were employed, it could cost U.S. agriculture between $5 and $8 billion a year. Now, it may have been former President Trump that employed those tariffs, but this administration has maintained those tariffs, if not raising them as well on China. Trade policy is one that appears to have been rather anemic with this administration, especially if we look at developing new agreements.
No, there's no doubt about it. I was always hopeful that as we completed the two-year phase one agreement with China, it would be continued with the Biden administration. It was not. The Chinese, at least my clients, were loath in terms of why did I go to all of that work to get to this agreement, and then a new administration doesn't want to adhere to it. And so that was something that resonated with me and throughout of agriculture. And now we find ourselves with, the Chinese able to go to a bigger supplier than the United States, which is called Brazil. And it's all about reliability of supply. And when the Chinese had the United States, we were pretty much the only supplier. Now they've, of course, included things like Argentinian corn and Brazilian corn and soybeans. These are things that the U.S. farmer should be worried about. And whether or not tariffs can bring back China into a phase, I don't even know what to call it, phase 1B or a phase 2 agreement, I'm uncertain, but there would be some pain, whether it's 3 months or 9 months before we got there, because I think the Chinese are ready. And in my work in the last couple of weeks, the Chinese are not buying U.S. soybeans for January because they don't know what the price will be. They keep telling me, Dan, I don't know if there's going to be tariffs right away or not, and because of that, I'm going to pay more money for the certainty of Brazilian soybeans. And this does not work in favor of the United States farmer.
If I look politically, I would have to believe that the U.S. and China really don't like each other very much. But I'm interested in those who use our product and we who raise the product. What about the Chinese industry? Have they been told, or are they purposely trying to turn away from U.S. supplies?
I think it's an understatement at the moment that the two parties don't like each other. I'm sorry for getting in front of you there, but this divorce between the Chinese and the United States has been getting worse and worse and worse. And again, in the media, whether it be in China or the United States, they continue to bash each other, and I don't see any change of that. And this political election has really highlighted that. Going forward, the Chinese have been very clear that they are not anxious to import from the United States. They will on a basis of need. But at the same standpoint, Chinese farmers are also under the same kind of pressure as U.S. farmers. As we calculate where the Chinese farmer is in corn, he's losing money. First time in margin, we can look backwards in over a decade. So if you believe the Chinese data, and I think it's close anyway, you would say that one of the reasons they're not importing is the protection of their own country and their farmer. But a year ago, China had imported or secured, let's say, from Brazil, close to 16 million metric tons of corn, a couple from the United States. This year, it's only 1 million metric tons of corn. And so that's kind of where China is. And I'm really wondering down the road where we are politically, if China will adhere to its WTO commitment, which is to import, 9 million tons of wheat, 7 million tons of corn. I'm becoming a little doubtful that they see that as an important commitment going forward.
If you were advising an administration on trade policy as a grain trader, what does it take to get the U.S. back in the game to gain our market share? Is it tariffs? Is it market development funds? What does it take for the U.S. to climb that hill, or can we climb that hill?
Well, years ago, I would probably tell you that it's price, right? But in price, then would if we were the cheapest supplier, we would get the business, and away things go. Today, with where politics are sitting, and this is the importance of that duopoly I mentioned earlier between the development of let's call it the BRICS and the G7, is price may not be as important as it used to be, and so this is maybe where the where tariffs or something like that has to be utilized as a hammer. I know everything in the trade business looks like a nail, so I don't want to be too liberal with all of that. But I do believe that as you think down the road, it is going to be more difficult to bring back U.S. agricultural trade than it has been in prior episodes. And so this is not about crafting a GSM program or some program to help us out. This is something about crossing and getting the attention of a party on the other side who really may want to favor another country over you, even if economics are more favorable for U.S. grain.
Is there anything that we can learn from a proposal in Europe that might slow down their deforestation goals?
Well, the deforestation goals were tabled at least for a year, though there's a final vote to be coming forward from the parliament in November. But member nations kind of did that with about a 98% surety that it'll be kicked back for a year. But, unfortunately, that gives our friends in Brazil another 12 months to geospatially try to certify that their acres have not been deforested. So, unfortunately, for all the investment that came from the U.S. commercial crowd, whether it be ADM or Cargill trying to make sure that we could work some of our product into Europe under those deforested EUDR conditions were favorable. But, unfortunately, it's being delayed, and this only provides Brazil with a better opportunity to get their house in order and to get the geospatialing activities underway.
Dan, I want to come back to energy policy for one more turn here, if we can. The Inflation Reduction Act certainly had benefits for the country, and it was one of the elements of that was to add opportunity for sustainable aviation fuel and the development of that market. But hinging that are regulations that won't come from USDA or EPA, but rather the Treasury Department at 45Z. Farmers are making decisions right now with what they're going to plant and cropping practices that they're going to use, and looking at a blank legal pad for what it takes to qualify for those credits.
No, it's a big mistake on the Treasury's part not to get this out somewhat sooner, and Secretary Vilsack has been promising that it will come out before the end of the year. But you're right. I mean, my farm clients in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana are spreading fertilizer already for the upcoming crop next year and making plans accordingly. And so Z45 will not be part of their decision-making process, at least this year. That doesn't mean all acres, but at least on what we would consider to be some of the corn acres looking forward is where we're at. But, I'm not sure what is holding up Treasury. You think they could make a decision on this going forward? We hoped it was going to be favorable in terms of what U.S. farmers needed to do to comply for sustainable aviation fuel, but each week we're left waiting, and now some of the hints are that we will not get a decision until after the election, which is going to come too late after farmers have really made their cropping decisions for the vast majority of 2025. So it's a disappointment, Jeff. And again, politically speaking, I just wonder who in Treasury doesn't know when farmers' cropping mindset really sets hold. This this should have come out late last summer.
Well, if not for the farmer, think of industry that has already made investment here and other dollars that are more than willing to invest in this if they have some level of security. The airline industry obviously wants to move in this direction, but the frustration of the Inflation Reduction Act of that U.S. dollars going to support used cooking oil from other countries and not supporting domestic production, if these rules are written so that the U.S. cannot participate, it begs to wonder what opportunity is meant or could be realized for U.S. industry and the U.S. farmer together here.
Well, I think you're right. And anybody that is in the renewable fuel space or biodiesel space is sitting there with only a couple of months to go and uncertain where their margins are. So this is not something normal for them that they can't navigate and decide should they buy a vegetable oil or should they buy another product to make mixtures on because they have no idea what tax policy will be. And so this becomes very important. And already I'm seeing some of my renewable diesel clients basically pulling back and saying, we're just going to slow operations because we don't know if we're making or losing money until we get 45Z announced. And that's really a shame for them and a shame for the U.S. farmer, collectively speaking, because certainty is what we need in terms of policy, and it's surely not what we're getting today.
Well, Dan, let's pull out the Dan Bossi Ag Resource Company crystal ball, if you will, and talk about a farm bill for just a moment. I spoke with Gary Snitke of the University of Illinois this past week and suggesting that an average grain farm in Illinois at about 1,500 acres will lose $30,000 this year. We're hopeful to see a new farm bill and hopeful to see it in this calendar year. What kind of an agriculture environment are we writing a farm bill for? Does this gloom cloud stay with us through 25 and for how long?
Yeah, I'm fearful that the gloom cloud stays with us through 25 and maybe years longer. You know, the key being to this whole thing is the ability to drive export demand. We can't have where U.S. ag exports are down $42.5 billion year on year and growing. And so collectively, we need to start seeing ag exports kick up because domestic demand with a mature ethanol industry and even with the expansion of E15 next year across the Midwest, it's not enough to change the tide. So technology and ag industry is doing what it should, which is boosting yield, but a lot of times that yield boost ends up in being extra grain stocks on farm and in elevators, and with those supplies, the market's staying somewhat depressed. I'm worried about agriculture longer term. I hope that we can get Z45 and some of the legislators coming around because nearby that's the only silver bullet that's out there today. And longer term, we really need to focus on export demand and seeing what we can do in terms of somewhat turning the tide, if you will, in world trade. And along with that goes Brazil, which their advantage has always been their currency, the real. So, you know, I don't want to say I'm looking for a weakening U.S. dollar as our debt continues to soar, but it wouldn't be a bad thing for American agriculture to somehow look at the real as an appreciating asset, as a declining asset, as it has been for so many years.
Looking to the commodity price received, Dan, close to 2 billion bushels at a corn carry, if you follow the USDA's latest grain stocks estimate and carryover, and half a billion bushels of soybeans or more in carry. How does this affect the price moving forward? What should farmers expect for returns in 25 and as long as this cloud stays with us?
So with our analysis, we are thinking about a cash corn price for 2025. This would be for the 25-26 crop year, assuming normal yields, which is all we can do at this point, somewhere in the vicinity of $4.20 a bushel. So it is not a profitable level with farmers having a break even just under $4.70. So there's a loss of 50 cents a bushel on corn. On soybeans, it's unfortunately a little more bearish than corn. We fear that at some point between now and next spring, should Brazil have the record large soybean crop of 169 million metric tons, that the bean market can slide all the way down to $9 a bushel. And with that in mind, the corn-soybean ratio goes down to 2-1, and farmers maybe cut back soybeans to plant more corn, but we've already got enough corn. So that's why I said we need demand drivers to get ourselves out of this hole, And today, relative to policy, we just don't have it. Sure, we could have a weather abnormality or dislocation, but that's not a good way, because at some point, you know, the neighbor, even though he may not have the crop and you do, it's not something that lifts all boats at the same time.
Black swans don't send RSVPs, but we have in the globe now the conflict between Hamas and Israel, the ongoing crisis between Ukraine and Russia, and the ongoing threat of China going after Taiwan. How do all of these elements play into markets, and what have they done? What could they do?
Well, I think the surprise in all of these aspects is that it hasn't been a lift to the energy markets. I think a lot of people were expecting crude oil and energy prices generally to rise relative to the Israeli, Hamas, and Iranian conflict, and it hasn't worked out that way. And I think it's all related to the destruction of demand from the Mideast. And again, as you look at, let's say, China and Russia, the inability of those two economies to get up off their feet to any large degree, a Chinese GDP level of 4.5 or 5% is not enough to carry the day in commodity demand for China. So wars have been generally bullish unless they extend themselves for long periods of time, and then they become economically destructive. And that's kind of where we find ourselves today in both the Mideast and the Black Sea. I hope that China is kind with Taiwan. I think that would be a much larger disruptor in terms of the world. But in some cases, the Chinese are probably in a position a little bit like the Russians were, where if they can't get Taiwan back at some point, they will make an effort. But I hope it's a ways down the road. If you've noticed that President Xi has promised on his term that he will return China, Taiwan to China. But again, with his lengthy staying as chairman and president, it probably will be later down the road as opposed nearby.
Well, Dan Bossi, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Dan, it is Open Mic. And today, sir, you have the last word.
Well, I worry about the world as it sits. I think all of us see it as more dangerous. I worry about the formation of China. I think that's the biggest problem that American agriculture will have, and somehow we need to get their attention. And China used to be our biggest ag customer back in 2023. They've now slipped to third place within that list, maybe down $10 or $11 billion. And somehow there needs to be an effort to get them back and maybe work more collectively or somehow in unison with them. That would be my only point. But on the other side of that is we need to get this renewable biodiesel and renewable diesel policy right. Z45 is so important, and it's somehow bringing back sustainable aviation fuel for the American farmer. So lots of work to do, Jeff. I just hope the politicians are up to it.
Our thanks to Dan Bossi, president of Ag Resource Company, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.